Welcome back to Awakened Exchanges. I'm your host, Jay Rich, and we've got a special episode for you today. This was actually my first recorded interview for a podcast, but it was meant to air at a later date. Sadly, with the fires followed by the rain and windstorms, Genesis Farms has been all hands on deck for the last few weeks. We still plan on talking with the founder, Sean Beeman, here soon, probably for next week's episode, actually, but I decided to start our first interview episode with another Sean. Before I get to a little rundown on this week's guest, I wanted to quickly mention that I'm recording this intro just hours after getting the news about Eddie Van Halen passing away. We actually posted a tribute to him on our social media accounts, but I wanted to mention it here as well. I've always had a special relationship to Van Halen, and I attribute that at least in part because one of my first Christmas stories, actually. My mom took me on a plane to Arizona so that we could go see my grandparents, and apparently I was a well-behaved kid and I didn't cry at all. So David Lee Roth was on the plane and apparently impressed by my single mom and the well-behaved child. He ended up feeding me some bean with bacon soup on the layover, and no joke, that's still my favorite Campbell's soup flavor to this day. Now, I wouldn't doubt that it was just an early experience for those taste buds that stuck with me, but this was right as Van Halen was breaking nationwide and their music proceeded to inundate my early childhood years in a very special way. The world has lost a legend, but Eddie Van Halen will never be forgotten. He has left an indelible impact on the world, and we salute you. Okay, so I mentioned Sean Shumway in the intro episode as being one of my longest-term friends and the man responsible for our original music here on Awakened Exchanges. Speaking of, we're cutting it close, but he's trying to finish it up for this episode. If it's still blank, I'm going to go ahead and take the blame, as I did tell him that we weren't airing until the 15th. That said, as I mentioned, this was my first recorded interview for this podcast, so it's fairly appropriate that we start with it. I kept this episode a little short just in case I had trouble learning how to sync up multiple mics and all the other issues, but I think we've worked out most of those kinks. If you were comparing Awakened Exchanges to the Joe Rogan Experience, then Sean Shumway is likely to be seen as my Duncan Trussell. He's probably going to be on a number of times, especially in the first year or two, and our topics will be just as wide-ranging. I hope that you enjoy this conversation even half as much as I did, and that you find something valuable in it that you weren't even expecting. Here's a brief rundown of our sponsors, which may sound familiar this go-round, but they are just as appreciated. I also plan on recording special ads for each episode as soon as I can manage the time and commitments, but for this round, I'm going to probably be using that same first cut. So if you're really paying attention, I apologize. That said, I truly do want to thank all of you personally for your support. We've nearly reached 200 downloads in the first 6 days, and you listening and sharing this podcast with your friends gives me a reason to keep striving to provide the best content that I can. If you have the means and you would like to contribute personally, please don't forget about our Patreon page, where you will get access to exclusive content and deals just for our dedicated fans. I'm even putting up our first Patreon video this week, I promise. As for our other sponsors, Awaken Vapes was the first of the Awaken brands and has been helping you modulate your high with CBD-only high-terpene vape products since 2019. Genesis Farms has been making the highest quality medicinal RSO, among many other amazing products, starting with the medical community back before 2010. And last but not least, Rose City Labs, still striving to be the most accurate and excellent lab in all of Oregon, serving more than just the cannabis industry since 2012. And remember, if you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe on YouTube, Spotify, wherever you're listening. Also, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. I know that every podcast says that, but it really does help spread the word and visibility. You can also help support us on Patreon or connect with us on the social media of your choice. We are at Awakened Exchanges on Facebook and Instagram, and at Awaken Exchanges, no ED, on Twitter. All right, now stay tuned and thank you for listening to Awakened Exchanges. Genesis Farms was founded on the belief in cannabis's ability to heal. Genesis Farms is more than a brand. They're a compassionate community of like-minded folks that generate top-quality cannabis products made with love and care. Community outreach is always on their mind, and their partnerships with Grow for Vets and Parents for Pot was just a beginning to what they hope to accomplish in the coming years. You can find their products on the best dispensary shelves across the state of Oregon. Their RSO is the most consistent quality in the state, their tinctures are second to none, and their personal massage oil will have you and your partner both coming back for more. Find them on Facebook, Instagram, and ask for them in your local dispensary today. Don't forget to listen to Sean's interview right here on Awakened Exchanges soon. Dan founded Rose City Labs in 2012 after an already storied history with cannabis. He first got actively involved in 2004 when he began treating some of his cancer symptoms with cannabis. He later owned and managed a dispensary in 2011 before embarking on a dream to bring integrity and dependability to testing in the Oregon cannabis industry. That dream is still alive and well today as they continue their tradition of maintaining fast turnaround times while providing the most accurate and dependable results in the industry. The difference is that Rose City Labs now brings their unique brand of integrity and accuracy to asbestos, heavy metal, water, microbiome, radon, urine, and even PPE testing. Tell them Jay sent you and remember to ask about the 15% new client discount. Last but not least, Awaken Vapes has been bringing you some of the highest quality CBD vape pens since ringing in the new year of 2019. I became passionate about cannabis after a car wreck left me with major migraines and no modern medical pills helped alleviate the symptoms. After having tried cannabis a handful of times in high school and college, it was actually a doctor's recommendation that led me to give it another try. Only then did I realize that we'd all been at least a little misled about the health benefits of this amazing plant. And despite an unexpected break because of the vape ban and then a global health crisis, the business is stronger than ever, and we invite you to check out our updated website today. We are still offering our three varieties with new and improved terpene formulations for enhanced flavor to go along with that custom blended terpene effect. Check back at www.awakenvapes.com and be the first online orders of our high-demand Delta 8 cartridges coming in stock here soon. Use the coupon code PODCAST20 at checkout all this month for 20% off your entire order. That's PODCAST20 for 20% off. Thank you for being here, Sean.
Very, very welcome.
So, welcome here to Awakened Exchanges. For those in our audience who are unfamiliar with you, which is probably a lot of them because, well, this is brand new and nobody knows anybody out here that I'm interviewing anyway. Why don't you tell us your name and a little bit about yourself?
Well, my name is Sean Shumway. I'm 40 years old. Probably the biggest interests and drives in my life are music, healing in all forms, spirituality, and general metaphysics studies, and other types of art and culture. And what I'm trying to do basically with myself is just grow, improve myself, and always make more sense of the life around me.
Very admirable goals. So what do you do for a living right now, and how do you incorporate some of that into that?
I work as a massage therapist, and I have to take that back and say that happens to be how I get my income, but it is not work to me. This is an absolute passion. This is something I love to do. I feel so blessed to be doing this. To know that I make a difference in people's lives touches me in such a way. For a long time, I worked in the food service industry, and especially for a certain very well-known corporate fast food place. And that taught me that there's more to life than money, that you need to do something that you feel positive and have a passion for about, and that you, that without that, money doesn't mean anything because it will rot your soul.
Very interesting look at it. I have definitely found that later in life that I've always not really cared as much about it, but I didn't take it into account in my profession the way you did.
Right. That was that really came to me through the development of why I became a massage therapist and my experiences in food service And also in observing my mom, you know, she had a, what it was, a quote unquote good government job. She worked for the Child Protective Services, but ultimately it was really, really hard on her, seeing the emotional toll it took on her.
Was
pretty big deal. You know, she had to come face to face with some of the hardest things in society that there are to deal with.
Was there anything that particularly stood out that she brought home with you or to you?
Well, first, when she just started first working there, and kind of the realization of what's happened is, you know, she just would often be crying. But then especially, she was a clerical worker, and it was part of her job too, as statements were passed back and forth between lawyers and whatnot, to redact them. So she was reading the full version sometimes of these kids describing what had happened to them, and, you know, carrying the emotional toll of that and not knowing how to handle it really had an effect on her.
I can't even imagine.
And so, but, and while I love my mother dearly, I would say that she had a tendency to kind of get, you know, get stuck in things. It was, you know, a good, steady job that she didn't want to give up. You know, and say, well, say, so in observing this, and I'm not saying that it's not important to seek financial stability at all. That's a very important thing to seek.
Absolutely. But
there has to be this other piece with it, too. You at least have to be able to get some sense of purpose of what you're doing, or, you know, some way to really disconnect from the parts you don't like about your job or something. But I knew for me personally, this turned into, overall in my journey, that was a big seed of me. I knew I had to find something that was really meaningful to me.
It's almost like the Buddhist concept of right livelihood.
Yeah.
Along exactly. That eightfold path.
Exactly.
Sure. So why did you gravitate towards massage, and what about it really drew you in?
Okay, so before I became a massage therapist, my main goal in life, my drive, was to try to be a musician.
Absolutely. Rock on.
And I'll expand more on that later, but I had a job, I had a band that was doing well, didn't work out, so I had lost my job at McDonald's, was kind of in this place of what now, what do I do next? Well, I knew I had to obviously get back to work, so I did get a job at Red Lobster, which was really great. But anyway, concerning what I wanted to do, these were the factors I was looking at. One, as I said, I had to do something, I knew I had to do something that was meaningful to me, that I could contribute. Two, I wanted something where I didn't have to be in school forever. At that point, I was already 30. I wanted something where I could go in, get some training, get out, and get to work. From experiences before, giving like your basic back rub to friends and family, I already knew and received good feedback that I had already had a knack to kind of find the tight spots in the body. And then also at that time, I had just started going through a doctorate course spirituality program that I'm still currently working my way through. And I knew that the one of the years was all dedicated to healing from the more energetic side of things. And I knew that would kind of pair well together anyway. And I had also heard good things about the school that I went to by one of my coworkers when I was managing at McDonald's. So kind of all these pieces were kind of there, just kind of pointing themselves at me. Figured, why not at least talk to the admissions office, see what would happen. And I did that. And as we've talked about, I am such a big, big believer in synchronicity, and that when you're on the right path, things will just work out right. And from the moment I drove down there and had the meetings with the admissions person, that was one of those experiences. Every bit about this felt right. And as soon as I got into school, I loved it, and it just took to it like a duck to water.
That's awesome. I definitely agree with that whole coincidences. Mathematically, they don't really work out for me. I think that they...
Go ahead. Yes, there was no such thing as coincidence. A good example of that from that story is, and this is part of when there were these little things happening that built me to come to this realization, was at the time the car I was driving, it was just starting to have issues where it wouldn't start. And if I could get a jump, it would be okay. And it, like, this was a brand new thing, and I hadn't sussed out whether it was, you know, the battery or the alternator away. You know, it's electrical, it can be a few different things. And right as I'm coming down the off-ramp into town, which at the time I was living in Kelso, Washington, this was a drive down to Vancouver, about 45 minutes away, so transportation was essential to make this happen. As I'm coming down the off-ramp, my car dies, and I have a moment of panic. Oh shit, what am I going to do? What if this feels really right, but I can't make this work because my car screwed up and I can't afford it, and da-da-da-da-da, and this whole cycle stuff, and I just stop myself, and I go, no. I opened myself and I said, okay, I trust if this is meant to be, something will work out. And not within 5 seconds, somebody pulled over and jumped my car. The car started up fine on the way when I left the admissions appointment, and then come to find out it was only a bad connector on the end of the cable onto the battery post, so it was a very simple fix.
Awesome.
Yeah, but there have been many of those moments of synchronicity when, especially when I'm stuck in a real fear moment, when I can stop and pull myself out of it, and some new awareness comes in.
And it's really easy for people to get like entwined in those fears and start spiraling in the anxieties and getting themselves out of control.
Exactly, exactly. You know, it's a when it comes down to it, it's a primal survival mechanism. You know, it's that fight or flight, and that we respond that way to emotional things just like physical things, and it's easy to just let that program auto run.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Which actually is sort of what I do as a massage therapist, is I deprogram those neurological programs out of the body.
Well, and they're finding that we hold so much of the stress in our body, but not just that, that with all these memory cells that we're finding throughout our bodies as well, it's very likely that we're holding that trauma very literally in our body.
Yep, absolutely.
So how do you help eliminate some of that side of it?
In a way, it comes down to intention, because ultimately there is no difference. You know, yeah, you can say it is the automatic part of ourselves that says, okay, this thing happened, we need to hold this muscle pattern in our body to defend from it. Mm-hmm. But what is that? It's that signal that you're in danger, that there's something there happening. And so how to help people work through that from what I can do in my scope as a healer. And I should also mention that besides as a massage therapist, I also hold a master's degree in energy medicine. So that also opens up what I can do in my scope of practice a little bit and how to help people. But it's by, I always look at it as the work I do, it's like a communication with the client, with the nervous system in the body. If you think of it in the same way as the way a psychologist or therapist or other mental health professional helps somebody sit down and really work through themselves something that they have a blockage on, whether they can't deal with the emotion or it's just too or more confusing, you know, in a way they guide them into the center of what that's all about and find a way to make resolution. As I apply pressure, put stimulus into the soft tissue of the body, I'm in the same way guiding them into that, whatever that initial thing was that says we have to hold this way. And it's literally that sense of, okay, it's okay, we don't have to let it go, because sometimes we may come to our outward mental realization of that, but that program is still held in the body. But still, when those releases happen, it is entirely possible for, and I've had clients experience this, and I've experienced it myself, to re-experience that emotion. Sometimes you can experience anger. I've cried several times. I've actually had moments of laughter. And you actually release the emotion that's held in the body around those events.
Must be an interesting experience as a therapist working with a client who has a unusual emotional outburst all of a sudden, and their experience with that as well.
Yeah, it is. Well, it's that we talked a lot about that in massage school, so we would be prepared when it happened. And my way of working with it now is to basically check in with them, let them know that what's happening is a part of the process, to just hold space for them, allow for them to be, and whether they want me to just and communicate and say, you know, we can just stop for a moment, let you deal with this, I can get back to work, you know. I allow space for whatever you need to be to work through this as much as you like or not.
Well, it's very interesting on there. I know that I actually want to expand a little bit into your musical interests as
absolutely,
well.
Absolutely, absolutely.
With that in mind, why don't you tell us a little bit about what kind of instruments you play and the wide variety?
Okay, so I would say I'm most fluent, or my primary instrument is the bass, the electric bass, or bass guitar. I would play an upright too, they're just expensive. But I also play a bit of six-string guitar. I'm fairly decent on percussion. The first instrument I ever learned to play was actually the flute. I played that through from 5th grade to 12th grade. And while I'm still interested, kind of where I went musically in other directions didn't quite allow for that as much. And so while I still know how, it take a little bit of practice to get my chops back, but that's something I could incorporate as well. I actually have a steel drum I like to just kind of mess around with. You know, I need to develop my voice for general singing, and also in these past few months, I've actually been working on doing what's called throat singing.
Interesting. Well, and also I want to take this moment to thank you very much. I know that this is actually the first official interview recording. I'm not sure that it's going to air in that order, but you're still working on the music. But thank you very much for your help and getting very that welcome. Intro music and the ads going. And I've always been impressed with your ability to hear those multiple levels and bring all of those sounds together. And I'm very much looking forward to the finished piece.
Yeah. I just had another little bit of inspiration kick in here for it. And I think, I'm already liking how it's going to shape up.
I love it. So tell us a little bit about some of your early influences. What got you into, what made you want to get into a band?
Well, I'll start by going back even to just wanting to play music. And it's pretty much, I'd say, because I grew up in a pretty musical family. My grandma played guitar and sang, and she doesn't much anymore because arthritis doesn't really let her play anymore, and she's just getting to that age where she just likes to kind of relax a little more and not be as active. But both my cousins that I was very close with, they were in band and orchestra growing up, and I always enjoyed, like, you know, the general music class in school and grade school, so I knew it was kind of something I wanted to do. And it's something that I just really related to because I understood it made sense to me. It was something that was fun and enjoyable. But also, as you know, I was definitely pretty introverted as a kid, you know, and I still am to some degree now, but, you know, much, much more so then.
Right there with you.
But what I didn't realize then, but that I appreciate so much about it now, is that music is a form of connection. When people get together and they're all focused on creating this sound as an ensemble, it creates a sense of connection. And then expanding on that to later years and stuff and really getting into bands and playing and, you know, my own experiences, I realized about how much of, you know, these emotional things, these experiences are translated back and forth, the relationship between the performer and the audience. So that's what I think I get out of it most, is both the expression and this feeling of connection.
And you've been consistently playing with bands for 25, 30 years at this point?
Off and on, like...
Yeah.
Okay, my first band I was in was in my sophomore year in high school. Yeah, that's when it was.
Okay.
And we weren't together really long. But then I didn't get another, actually I jammed with people, but didn't get another like full-time functioning band until, when did Lung Invasion get together? Around 2004, if I remember right.
Would you consider Lung Invasion probably the most successful, longest term band?
Well, it depends on what you define by success.
Why don't you tell me?
Now, at the time, our goal was to try to, you know, do this for a living. And as far as any other project I've been involved in, as far as that's concerned, yes. Now, we did not get far or anything, but we did actually, we had started to break out of our local scene in Kelso, played a couple of gigs down here in Portland. we actually, through a very fortunate turn of events, ended up opening for Great White.
I remember.
Yeah. And we were playing really interesting, fun music. And we were like right on the verge of, we had just recorded a demo. We were right on the verge of trying to figure out, okay, what's the next step? We really need to push this out and, you know, try to get even more of a name built, try to get more momentum behind this. And then things essentially fall apart because of personalities.
As they tend to do in most bands.
Yeah. And what I really learned from that experience was a real eye-opener for me. Because what I found is trying to do it for a living sucked all the joy out of it. Mm. It felt like at the end, especially when things were kind of not going well, but it felt like almost like a job.
I can understand that.
And there was more frustration, and when it came to playing, it just felt like going through the motions. Which now, though, when I go back to listen to the demos, you know, it's still very good music, and I was proud to be a part of it, and I learned a lot about that, too, became a better player from that.
Yeah.
And still love that I was part of making that music. That's great, great music that we made. But I knew then from going on, which was shortly after that, though, is when I eventually found my way into massage school. And as I said before, not only is that a job, it's my new passion. That was it's my new direction in life. So I went through this period where I had to kind of reevaluate what music even meant to me. Because before, there was this drive to do it as a career. Mm-hmm. Since that was gone, it's like, well, I like it, but why am I even doing it? But I eventually found my way back to a passion for it again. But I knew that going forward, that number one, it had to be playing music for the joy of playing music.
Interesting. I've heard so many people trying to follow dreams that as soon as it turned into money, the dream almost crumbled.
Yeah. But I will say, though, even though that didn't work out, that was such an important experience for me, because it was through that I met the people and got the guidance and the community I found for my spiritual development.
Okay, tell us a little bit more about that.
So I was going through a point of reevaluating my own views. I had been raised Christian, and in the early, well, I guess mid-2000s, but anyway, I was in my early 20s, I was thinking about 9/11. And, you know, and specifically, you know, the idea of the suicide bombers and why they do this for, you know, for their, partially for their spiritual beliefs, why they believe it's great to martyr yourself and all that. And I'm thinking, wow, for somebody to do that, it must take a lot of faith. Well, if there is only, quote-unquote, one true God, as the belief system I was part of at the time says, how could somebody have that much faith in a false God? And I realized, well, what if they believe it because it's all they've been told their whole life? It's all they know. At that time, I hadn't actually heard the whole Plato's Cave story, mm-hmm. but basically the same idea. And so I started to really reevaluate for myself. Well, is what I say as my belief system what I truly feel and know for myself to be true, or is it just because it's what I've always been told? And the only answer I had myself at the time was, I don't know. And I figured, well, this is kind of an important thing. I should figure it out.
I had been raised by lapsed Catholics or a lapsed Catholic and a lapsed Lutheran myself. So I had started studying religion in college, actually. In fact, I think I had a religion class when you were staying with me up there, but
I believe so. I remember you trying to hunt down. You had to find a specific version of the Bible.
I did. It was a very interesting class, actually. But you definitely went a different path. So, how did you meet up with them?
So I was at this point of really reevaluating my own views, and I said, "Okay, let's drop everything I know." start looking at different concepts, ideas, and find what really resonates with me. And I'd done kind of a little looking around and kind of seeing what I could come up with on my own. And at the time, and I didn't even know this term existed yet, but it led me to kind of a general pantheistic view, that what I looked at it as, my personal viewpoint is what Christians connect to through prayer, what anybody pagan connects through their rituals and sites, what Buddhists reach through deep meditation, what the Native Americans call Father God or Mother Earth and Father Sky. That's essentially what the Muslims call Allah, etc., is all basically labels for the same thing. And where all these differences are just the way the different cultural beliefs around that have come up.
I agree 100%.
And I came through that view as when I was in college briefly going for music education, but it's pretty much my pre-requirements. In English class, we talked about, we read this book all about classic fairy tales and about the idea of how across different cultures, there are these same stories coming up. You know, there's many, many countries that have a story of Little Red Riding Hood that are almost exactly identical. And before that, I had taken a class where I'd, a site class where I'd first come into the Jungian ideas of archetypes. So I already knew about there were these common expressions through of the collective unconscious and all these different outward expressions. And so I was reevaluating this. I was like, well, why couldn't the idea of deity be the same? And that pantheistic viewpoint, or I guess at that point it was universal. But yeah, which eventually led to pantheism.
What's the difference between the two?
Well, I would say universal may say that there's truth in all religion. It may or may not include the idea that the entire universe is God.
Okay. That probably falls in line with what I tend to go towards. Okay, and then pantheistic?
Which, that's the pantheism. Pantheistic. All is God.
Perfect.
So
at this pantheistic point, encompasses universalism, but not the other way around.
Right.
Gotcha.
Or at least in my viewpoint.
Yes.
Which is one of my big spiritual principles is, it's all about anybody's personal viewpoint. You have to allow for that. But anyways, going back to my personal evolution, I was at this point of trying to, you know, figure this out. And at the time, I was living with the Dharma and the Ban Lung invasion, and his girlfriend at the time was a solitary pagan. And we would get in discussions about this because it's a subject that's always been just a fascination to me. And I started to realize some of the things she was talking about kind of lined up with some of these ideas I came up to on my own. You know, and I was really interested in kind of exploring that and thinking, huh, that's kind of interesting. But then I credit her for one of the big moments of my awakening, because before I really even knew all some of the finer points of quantum physics, she's the one who first introduced me to the concept of everything is energy. And that was a Rosetta Stone moment. So much clicked into place and made sense from there.
Absolutely. Energy cannot be destroyed. So if all and we like, are is that energy, go ahead.
And, you know, talking about, you know, which I understand now, but this is the beginning of like, oh, and that's how, like, why magic and prayer work is about this energy flowing and stuff. And it just, this cascade effect. So then I knew that was a big, big awakening opening for me. And then beyond there, the drummer and this girlfriend had another couple that were their friends, but they hadn't been in touch for a while. One time they came over and to listen to the band practice. Come to find out, that couple was not doing very well. And long story short, they broke up and I ended up dating, her name is Elena, the female from that couple. Through her, I eventually met Elwin Herman, the solo leader of the group that I am part of, Seekers of the Stones, who wrote the class I'm taking, who is my leader, my mentor, and the person I follow, and has been really the basis of my path is, and it is, could be considered a pagan in that it's very attuned to the circles of nature. We draw a lot from pre-Christian, both Nordic and Celtic belief systems. But she's found a way to really bring it forward, where a lot of those people might do it, you know, they do only do everything in the very traditional ways because that's the way it's always been done. She, like I do, like we talk about, realizes that there's a core truth to everything. And, you know, well, we did this way in the past. What does that mean to us in present day? And, you know, that this is just an outward expression of these core concepts. And we spend a lot of time working talking about the core concepts. You know, of the core concepts of, you know, self-responsibility, what you create your life, you know, that all, everything is connected, that, you know, to act in love, that what you send out comes back to you, you know, these same things that, you know, are in most spiritual belief systems, or actually I believe all, whether or not the language really fully describes it.
I would say it just depends on how it's being described in those languages, mm-hmm. for sure. So you met Elwyn in the Seekers of the Stones.
Mm-hmm.
You...
That was in... I met her for the first time in 2009. I dedicated the group later that year, later in 2010.
Okay. And so 2010, you became part of that group, and then you have a big event coming up this week, and is that correct?
Yes, it's a very much a moment I feel very strong about, is I'm actually going to be initiated as a high priest within that belief system.
Congratulations. I am looking forward to being there and joining you for that.
Thank you. This is such a journey this has been in stepping into myself. You know, a big part of what we believe is looking into yourself, what's considered the shadow, if you're familiar with those psychological terms, and dealing with the blockages within yourself from creating the life you want. And it's all about getting real with yourself, working through things, and really acting from an empowered place and creating the life you want. And I have felt I've really stepped into that, but also I feel a calling that is now the time for me to take these lessons I've learned and offer them for the people that are ready to step on that journey themselves in whatever way that I can help them.
And how do you see yourself in that role? Is it just something being open for them?
That's a big part of it. It's also within our group. It's also within our group that they're writing, creating the rituals that we do. You know, we used to do bigger community events, but obviously COVID has changed that a bit.
Absolutely. Changed the whole world.
And helping people through basically what has always helped me is when a hard situation comes up is realizing how to deal with it, and that it's there to teach me something about myself, to empower me, to push me to be better, to grow. And if you can help somebody find their own path through that, to deal with what happens in life in an authentic, empowered way, no matter what happens, then there's nothing that can stop them or anybody else or me.
I really like that viewpoint. And I believe that we're all here to grow.
You know, to sum it up in one of the popular memes out there, life isn't about waiting for the storm to pass, it's about learning to dance in the rain.
I like that one myself. Hmm. So, where do you see yourself going with this as time progresses?
Helping people grow and develop themselves.
Do you see a connection?
Go ahead. For the immediate future, it's going to be about, we've just had some new members dedicated into the group itself. And so we've really been working on forming a strong bond within ourselves so we can reach out to the community in a more effective way, and we're probably going to continue that work because, again, what we can do as far as in a larger scope is limited by COVID. So I think the immediate future for us is going to be, again, really about just shoring up with ourselves and helping each other develop and grow a little bit more, but also, you know, I always look at that kind of, you know, ripples out into the world as well, even within our own individual lives.
Absolutely. Even having that community for you guys to be able to join mm-hmm. in and still have that support is more than a lot of people are have in their lives right now with mm-hmm. everybody being stuck in their houses and unsure of what to do next. So,
right.
Do you see any overlap with the music and that as well, or what you plan on doing?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay, so one, in some of the things that I create, you know, this is a type of loop system. Part of our practices doesn't can involve drumming and chant and whatnot like that. And part of what that is all about is about raising energy. It's about getting everybody into the same vibe. It's just like if you ever been to a truly great concert, not just a good concert, but a great concert, you can feel the exchange with the people around you. And like say when, you know, the singer or sometimes the drummer does it, works the crowd and gets a boom, boom, and gets the whole crowd clapping together. It gets everybody in sync with each other. And that's essentially what chanting or drumming does, you know. Chanting, I mean, sure, you want to express whatever your intention you're bringing, but it's about getting on that same rhythm, that same alignment. And while our group does that to a certain degree, you know, it's at a very basic level, which is not to say it's not powerful energetically for what it needs to do, but I'm thinking about ways where I can incorporate what I know how to do musically in deeper understanding and help others grow and do things a little bit more, you know, really expand on that and, you know how to build that energy sonically, you know, because, you know, knowing multiple rhythms and how to layer tones and things and, you know, bring those elements in. Also, within, you know, traditional Celtic societies and really all kinds of belief systems, part of their, before there was a written word, the wisdom keepers were the bards. They weren't just entertainers and musicians, you know. Through the stories they told, that's how the knowledge was passed down. And I really feel like as I develop my own music, that's going to be part of it as well. You know, looking at drawing inspiration, of course I'm going to be telling the story of my life as any good performer does and talking about the human experience. But I want to really work with the ideas of symbolism and expressing these things.
Well, as we know, both of us having studied Jung and Campbell, life is an archetype in some ways. You can start relating all of those to there, so bringing that into the bard aspect really makes sense.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, it's about, again, these truths that what I feel are the truths for me, I believe truly are universal. It's about just finding what different colors you want to put on them about that outward expression. I want to jump back to music real quick because there's one Please. Piece that I haven't mentioned that I believe I need to give some good credit to, and that is my current band.
Please, I was going to ask when you guys were performing next. Then again, when is anybody performing next, right?
Yes. We, well, if COVID had to happen, it happened at a good time for us because we're going through some member changes.
So you can actually practice and get used to the new bandmates.
Right. My band is called the One-Eyed Cats, and we primarily play covers, and it's all based around like blues, soul, funk, R&B, that whole general family of music, and it's just really, really a lot of fun to find people that get along this well, have this level of musicianship, have schedules that work, and have the same expectations for the band. It's such a rare thing. And it's just been really a really, really enjoyable experience and helping me get back in touch with the joy of playing music and connecting with people through that way.
I have to admit, when you come back from practice, it's almost like you're floating through the door. It's pretty fun to watch the pure joy coming back on your face. So
it's always a nice, a good, healthy release.
So let's see. As we're getting towards the later part of this interview, do you have a piece of advice that you would give people as they're trying to find their path?
Follow your intuition. I know people have always experienced those strange little gut feelings where you just know something. Whether you can really prove it or not, you just know it. It is never wrong. You may have a lot to figure out around what it's telling you, but where it is leading you to go is what you need to do. And that will never, ever, ever serve you wrong.
I want to caveat that a little bit with the don't let your ego voice and those wants and desires overpower you. Listen to the actual gut. Stop, take a step back and listen. Make sure you're not poisoning your own mind. But I agree with the gut intuition when you're actually clear-headed and thinking properly.
Right.
So we've known each other for a long time. The few people that are listening to this podcast, at least to start, have listened to the intro probably and have heard about us meeting up in sixth grade. Do you have any favorite stories of our childhood? Anything that helped shape you a little bit or shaped me?
Well, that's a good question. You know, because it's all great.
We spent so many weekends basically alternating at each other's houses and then lived together a few times over the years as well. And
you know, I can just say, as somebody who grew up pretty introverted and that had a hard time connecting with other people, all those nights staying up, watching bad movies, getting really, really caffeine high, and just that point of connection is just invaluable. And I want to let you know, I just realized something a couple nights ago, too.
What's that?
That while there are plenty of people in my life that know that I have close connection with, but you're the only one in my life that wasn't either family that I met through my expression of music or through my path, my spiritual path and my healing work. You know, you were there from the beginning.
Pure friendship.
Yes.
I have to admit, you are, if I look back, and I have some people in my life who I've met before you, but who have stayed solid friends and have been throughout. You are the earliest one. You are the one that stayed throughout the moves to North Carolina and back and all the other places. So,
I'll tell you one thing I really, really appreciate is I find it fantastic that we had this experience from mid-teens to 20s or so. Passive lives kind of took us apart. We kind of reconnected, what, 3-4 years ago now?
Yeah.
And through the times throughout our respective journeys, we have started, come back around, but ended up in very similar wavelengths and points of view and experienced very similar points of growth and similar views of the world.
Agreed. And in some ways, complementary to where your experiences helped me put a different lens on my own.
But likewise.
I was actually just thinking back when I was doing the research for the intro episode to one of my favorite stories. We never knew when to quit. So when I missed the sign up for the SATs in Vancouver,
yes.
What do? We decide to drink God knows how many Pepsis and Mountain Dews and whatever throughout, probably till what, 2-3 in the morning. When I had to go up to Kelso to take my SATs up there, and your poor mother having to wake us up off the couch and drive my tired butt over to the SATs.
Yeah.
I actually forgot my license at the house. She had to drive all the way back to the house, get that, drive back, and give that to me in the pre-cell phone days if we hadn't noticed in just the right amount of time. And then what do? I fall asleep during the SATs. I still did all right, so I guess we'll just leave it at that. But so many stories. Very much appreciate having you in my life for so long, my friend.
Same.
So as we're getting towards the end of this here, is there any topic you want to geek out on? Any unusual topic of your choice that you want to throw in?
You know, I don't know if there's any specific topic that comes to mind, but I find myself in a place in my life right now where I'm really focused on learning to be authentic and put myself out in the world. So I just want to talk a little bit more about where I'm at, the path of my life, and that in general.
Please.
So I have recently had a relationship end, and I'm at this point of reevaluating myself, reinventing myself. And what I find is most important is authenticity. You know, in any situations, you have to be yourself. And I say this as learning this lesson the hard way. When we think about it, again, going back to some of those holding patterns I mentioned, talking about massage work, you know, we all have this idea of who we want to be, who we think we should be, but then we always end up compromising that for who, what we think other people expect of us.
Very true.
And again, I am saying this in self-reflection. And so from here on out, I know that is such a big focus for me, is to be fearlessly be myself in any and all situations. Now, of course, that means giving thought and consideration to the words you choose to express yourself. But I think just maybe if we everybody did that and allowed space for everyone else to do that themselves, we might see some pretty good changes around here.
I agree. I think that people are afraid to use their real voice, or when they use it, they want to use it to hurt or spite out of a pain or a fear instead of stepping back and taking that space and finding that neutral ground where you can still be true to yourself and speak those words in a way that don't cause more harm.
Exactly. This is something, you know, I've learned and I'm always working to cultivate better and better, and that I find I often give advice to people is in, you always have to look for in situations, find the balance between truly holding compassion for somebody no matter what they're going through, because anything they do is ultimately an expression of their own pain and hurt and their background, while still holding every boundary that you need to for yourself.
I definitely think that we could all benefit from doing that more often. So we're now to this part that I'm testing out. Hopefully it goes well. I'm going to call it the moment of vulnerability.
Okay.
We'll see how this all plays out as I interview more people. But what motivates you to do what you do?
The quest for understanding.
How so?
It started with trying to, you know, back at the beginning of this spiritual journey, you know, better understanding what the idea of deity is and bringing that into my life, but also understanding myself better, because before I went through this, I lacked myself, had good enough self-esteem, but I didn't feel like I knew myself very well. And so I wanted to better understand that. And that I started to learn about, you know, through, like I said, mentioned psychology and whatnot, you know, these little things about people. So yes, I want to better understand people. I want to better understand the world. And it's this eternal quest for knowledge, because as they say, you know, through scientific discovery, any answer just leads to more questions. And I want to just keep following that endless drive as far as it takes me.
It's interesting. As you were saying that, I started thinking, they say that we fear what we don't understand. So by seeking to understand everything, by eliminating that fear, you're getting back to that pure love that you've been seeking out that whole time, too.
It's a fantastic point, yeah. I put that together, but I like that a lot.
So with that in mind, what scares you?
Rejection. Abandonment.
Abso-fucking-lutely.
You know, for... we could go down a really, really deep metaphysical rabbit hole about where some of this abandonment comes from, but we'll just keep it to this lifetime. You know, my parents got divorced when I was less than a year old, and while my dad was in my life and I had a pretty okay relationship with him until later on, you know, he still wasn't in the home. He still wasn't there, and I didn't even realize until 2 or so years ago the impact that had on me from the point of having abandonment issues around that. Like, I didn't even realize that was there.
I 100% understand.
And then the rejection part, you know, as I talked about, I was pretty introverted as a kid. I got bullied a lot, you know, and I actually think, now that I think about this whole understanding thing, you know, I often was told, as I was the ones who asked the most questions in class, you know, because again, I was wanting to understand better, and I got told to shut up a lot, and, you know, for expressing myself.
They just want you to get the right answer and get through the day,
and,
damn it.
And especially by other kids who, you know, wanted the class to move on.
Absolutely.
And a lot of times, even back then, what I had to put out into the world was shut down. And I didn't get a lot of acceptance. And so, while now I've done a lot of work, and I realize that's all about really... that really comes from within, and I feel like I'm in a great place now, that doesn't mean that mechanism isn't still there. It's just now I feel like I can work with it a little bit better. You know, say we'll equate it to the movie A Beautiful Mind, where Russell Crowe at the end, you know, he still sees those people walking around, he just chooses not to acknowledge them. You know, that mechanism is still at play.
I can totally see that. It's... definitely been a challenging year to bring up a lot of those things in your path, but it seems like you have been navigating them well so far.
I believe so.
What would you consider the game-changing moments in your life? What are you most grateful for? What are the big steps that have propelled you along your path?
Well, you have a couple different questions there, so...
I know, I just threw a few at you.
So by game-changing, to me, that is what has caused a real paradigm shift in me. What has caused me to see the world in a new way? I would say probably the first of one of those was when my grandpa died when I was 13. That was the first close family member I had ever lost. So to experience grief on that level... But then he was the main father figure in my life, and so to step away from that. But even though that was a big process for me to go through, when I came through it, I kind of realized, I almost felt like, oh, I almost wondered, is there something wrong with me? Because I didn't seem to be as tore up about it about everybody else. But I think part of it is because I found a certain acceptance in the finality of death, in that they're gone, all you can do is get over it. And was able to work through it, where I believe that has filtered through to today, though, now is, you know, that's still very much how I feel, and my views on death are much more that it is just simply a transition than an ending.
What I found interesting that I'm just kind of putting together in my head right now is the year your grandfather died was the year I moved back to Kelso, and the year my grandfather died. The year we met, and all of that all happened. I was at the end of that year. I was back in Kelso, and
I believe it was the following year when we actually met. It was my eighth grade year.
Yeah, so that school year, that next school year, it was still in that same calendar year.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the thing that just threw me off. I did not realize all of that.
Again, there are no such thing as coincidences,
brother. There you go.
Okay, but so probably next game-changing, paradigm-shifting moment for me was when I had my first relationship. Mm. Now, I was an extremely late bloomer when it came to that. I didn't have my first girlfriend until I was 22. The relationship only lasted about 6 months because, you know, first relationship. We'll just chalk it up to that.
Yeah.
But, and I was absolutely devastated after. There's nothing that hurts quite like the loss of that first love. But once I worked through that, I came to this viewpoint of complete appreciation for the experience, because it awakened the side of me that I never knew had existed. I had never seen Sean, the boyfriend, before. And I knew how much being in a relationship, finding that connection, uplifted me, and what a positive experience falling in love was. And that has really been the kind of the seed of what I've always said before about facing these difficult situations. I don't know if I mentioned this before or not, but this is a big keystone point in my life, is anytime you face something, look for the lesson, look for what this is trying to show you. Follow that and you can work through anything. And so that and everything from up to now, I hold appreciation for the difficulties in my life. And then sometimes when something new comes up and life is kicking my ass and I'm in the thick of it, if I always come back to that truth that there's something I'm going to get out of this, is going to help me be a better person. Now, does it magically fix any of everything? Not at all. But it takes the weight off. It busts open that steam valve. It lets the pressure off so I can step back and make better decisions about how to deal with it.
One of my trips left me with the mantra, it gets easier every time I breathe.
Very good.
Yeah. And you can just work that right into each other. Every time I breathe, it gets easier every time I breathe. And and it, when I get stressed out, I actually, that just a little snippet of that makes me stop, take a little bit of a breath, and move forward.
I have a suggestion for you. Hold that mantra next time we do Qigong.
Let's try
that. Because you're actually moving breath in and out, clearing those blockages with the breath and the movement.
I think about that on occasion, but I've never held the mantra. So I'll try that next time.
I'm going to work with you on that, yeah.
I appreciate it.
So, then next game-changing moment after that was starting the band, getting into Secrets of the Stone, finding my path. And then most recently, it was my marriage ending.
Very painful.
In a lot of ways, but also one of the most empowering experiences of my life.
Hard to hold that balance between the two emotions when there's so much history and love entangled in that.
It is. And, you know, I still care about my ex. I still think she's a good person. But when I finally swallowed the hard pill of that who we are as people does not work to make a relationship, and was able to hold space myself and step away from that, it was one of the most empowering experiences of my life. And these past few months of processing through the emotional side of it have been very, very insightful to myself.
I'm very grateful for that, and I truly do hope that she processes and finds her way along her path as well.
Me too.
So that brings us through the main game changers, influential people in your life. You hit a few there, your grandfather as well. But is there somebody else that really sticks out you wanted to mention?
I'm going to go back to just give us a shout out to some of my musical influences.
Please.
As a bass player, John Paul Jones of Led Zeppelin, Geddy Lee from Rush. And it all kind of depends on what style of music I'm playing. You know, when I was in Lung Invasion, which was very, you know, hard rock, heavy metal, drew a lot from Steve Harris and Danny Chancellor from Tool. Nowadays, in my blues band, I'm really pulling from, from John Paul Jones, but also from Tommy Shannon, from James Jamerson. You know, really digging that soul and funk groove. But while all these guys are great players, a couple of people I want to really come back to, one is John Paul Jones, and what I draw from him is that knowing how to be adaptable and play the right part for the right song. Mm. Geddy Lee as a bass player, his tone is a big influence for me, but also the whole band of Rush has been a big, big influence on me and my life, not only as a musician, but who they are as people and how they've conducted their career, and that they've always been authentic to themselves from the beginning. You know, in the very early days, you know, they were doing these 8-10 minute long epic conceptual pieces, and the record company was coming down on them saying, no, you don't know that. You got to give us the 3-minute radio singles. That's the only way you're going to make it. They stood their ground. All they've ever done is play the music they want to play and explore the things they want to do. And the value of that authenticity, that honoring yourself, has been such an influence to me over my life. You know, that's actually probably another piece of why, when I talked about at the beginning, coming into massage work and trying to find something that means something to me. You know, that's another influence in that decision as well.
I can honestly say that you introduced me to Rush, and that particular way of thinking about them, I have not heard from anyone else. And the insane number of Rush fans who have made it into pop culture and made them such a reference now, mm-hmm. makes me wonder how many of them can verbalize it that way, or how many of them might even just have that little click moment with the way you describe that. It's very interesting.
Which, to me, that is also one of the beautiful things about music, though, is that it is 100% subjective. You can take a song, ask 10 different people why they like it, and you get 10 different answers.
Exactly.
And that is just fantastic to me.
Well, thank you so much for your time. And is there any last words, anything you want to say before you go? Anybody you want to thank?
I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity to express myself.
You're very welcome.
I want to thank all the people of my life who have given me the experiences to be who I am. I want to thank Elwyn Herman for her guidance. I want to thank my family members, Archie, my grandma, Billy, my Aunt Kim, my cousins, Mandy and Cassie, for their constant continued support, my Uncle Keith. I want to thank all the bosses that I've had over the years for teaching me what that means and creating the various workplaces I've been in, positive or negative, in the way they've shaped my life. I want to thank the people I've been in relationships with. My first girlfriend, Kelly. My second one, Elena. My ex-wife, Shalimar. Because without your experiences, I simply would not be who I am today. And I wish you all the best. And for whatever what it's worth, I value our experiences together.
Thank you very much, Sean. I really appreciate you being here and accepting the honor of being the first guest on here. I couldn't see anybody else that I wanted to share that with. Thank you for being you and being always doing things the Shum way. And I can look forward to the rest of our life path together.
Me too, brother.
Thank you, everybody.
That's all for this episode. Thank you again for spending your time with us at Awakened Exchanges. We hope you'll join us next week. A special thanks to all of our listeners. You are the reason I'm doing this. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe to us on Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you're listening. And please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Every podcast says that because it really does help spread the word and visibility. You've gotten us up to nearly 200 views in those first 6 days. Let's see if we can get at least half of that in reviews on Apple Podcasts. You can also support us on Patreon or connect with us on the social media of your choice. We are at Awakened Exchanges on Facebook and Instagram, and at Awaken Exchanges on Twitter.